And basically, it's adapted via a
Joan Didion, yes.
Yeah,
Joan Didion.
The movie is a train wreck.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's a total bomb. It really pains me to say this. It's just incoherent. It feels like there's an hour missing in this movie because you just don't really know what is happening.
Well, I know what's happening, and I haven't even seen it. Dad has been mixed up with some kind of Iran-Contra arms supplies to the...
I knew that. I knew all that, but, I mean, it's just a narrative, and the way the story is told, it's just a complete mess. And, Anne Hathaway she has a nude scene in the movie, and she's supposed to have, like, one breast.
Yeah.
She had a vasectomy in one breast, but there's a lot of scenes where she, clearly when she wears a shirt, so you can see two nipples.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
But there's just forget about that complaint. I mean, Ben Affleck is in the movie for I would say. 15 minutes, maybe. Willem Dafoe as well.
Ben Affleck plays a guy who's interested in her romantically, as well as, or you tell me, right?
Right. I mean, he works for the government. He's sort of a mediator between intelligence agencies and even potentially the president.
Okay. Okay. All right. What about the father, the Anthony Hopkins thing that I've been reading about? That sounds kind of good, no?
This is a great performance from Anthony Hopkins. He just really this is even better than his two bulbs performance, and I have no idea if this movie's going to be remembered come awards season in like 9-10 months.
Uh-huh.
But he blew me away with this.
Well, so you have to spit it out. He's grappling with Alzheimer's or something like that. Yes.
Right. He's grappling with dementia, and what the director does in this movie is he basically tries to get you into his head so that you don't really know what is reality and what is fiction.
Ah. Okay.
And that is the fascinating part of the movie where it's always a puzzle and you're always second guessing everything.
All right.
But if I do have a complaint about this movie, it's that it's based on a stage play and it does show, its roots are the stage, and it does somehow feel like a chamber piece.
That's okay. Not everything needs to be a whirling, free-form cinematic experiment. There's nothing wrong with just sitting there and listening to good dialogue, you know. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But that makes it feel a little dry at times because there isn't really... it's not overtly stylish. It's just, the filmmaker just tells the story. I just can't remember his name, but he has a background in stage plays. And Olivia Colman is very good at this, as well as Anthony Hopkins' daughter, and he just struggles the entire way through. If there's a performance out of Sundance that could get buzzed in 9-10 months, it's Anthony Hopkins. The guy still has it. He's a consummate actor, and he's just a pro at making it look so easy.
Do we know the director?
No. It's his debut.
Okay.
It's a feature debut, actually, and he was mostly in British theater before this.
Okay, cool. So you have not seen the other film that people were talking about. Is it pronounced Minari, or how do you pronounce it? Minari?
I believe it's Minari.
Okay.
It stars Stephen Yeun. Mm-hmm. It's about a Korean family. From what I've heard, the less you know, the better. Produced by A24.
Right.
And who also have Zola, in which is the love and hated movie. Of the Senate. There's no doubt about it. Nothing comes close to the passionate response Zola got.
I saw or read one analogy between Zola and Uncut Gems, saying it had that same kind of energy. Is that true?
No, I wouldn't go the Uncut Gems route, actually. It does feel like an A24 greatest hits complex.
Okay. All right.
And maybe add in a little project in there, and the European critics I spoke to here, they just despised this movie. and the American critics are mostly mixed on it, but those that like it really, really, really like it. It's based on a true story, and except there wasn't a book written about it, mm-hmm. or a novel written about it. It's based on these 144 tweets that this woman Zola.
Yeah, yeah. Back in that was back in 15, right?
Hours.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And I mean, this is a movie that is filled with idiots. There's only idiots. Movie. Mm-hmm. There isn't a bright mind, and so if you don't mind that in your movies, I found many passages very interesting, but I don't think it really gels as a whole.
And by the way, I have not heard that much about Palm Springs, but that has apparently the biggest monetary buy of the festival. In fact, it's the biggest since Birth of a Nation, and did you see it, or what's the reaction to that?
Yeah, I saw it this morning. So it beat Birth by a Nation's record by 69 cents.
Yeah, right.
If you can believe that.
Yeah.
So Palm Springs uses the Groundhog Day time loop gimmick.
Okay.
It's from the Lonely Island crew, which is led by Andy Samberg, and Andy Samberg is the lead in this movie.
And Samberg plays what in 25 Words or Less? What's the deal with Samberg?
He plays a guy that's stuck in a continuous time loop, much like Bill Murray was in Groundhog Day, and he accidentally brings in this basically the time loop takes place at a wedding. He has to basically go through the wedding every single day, and he accidentally brings this girl that he meets there in the time in his time loop, and she basically has to go through the experiences with him, and they slowly but surely obviously fall in love.
Okay.
Because they get to see each other every day, and it's a very funny movie. What works in this movie is the comedic timing that Sandberg brings. I don't think it is what you would call a work of art, or a great movie, but it's very entertaining, and buying it for $15 million might be a bargain, because if you give this movie a summer release date, it could bring in a lot of profit.
Okay.
It's a real crowd pleaser.
Now there's a, everybody said, what everybody loves about Groundhog Day is that Bill Murray's kind of going through the cycles that Buddhists or people from Eastern mystical orientations, basically you refine and get better and better at being a person, the more lives and the more times you repeat yourself. Is that more or less the idea with Sandberg, or is that just allowing them to get closer and closer to falling in love?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
And also, silliness remains. There are creative. The time loop is used in very creative ways throughout. J.K. Simmons shows up as a guy that Sandberg also accidentally got into the time loop. He's just very, very pissed off, and he just wants to kill Sandberg every time he wakes up. So you see J.K. Simmons with a rifle gun the entire movie trying to kill Andy Samberg.
Right.
It's quite funny, and but again, I mean, you know, the reviews will be positive. This is not an awards caliber movie by any stretch, but it's a very entertaining movie, and I can probably see it playing South by Southwest in August.
Oh, cool. Okay. So this is basically.
I think it'll be there.
So when you break it all down, I mean, as you say, there's been a lot of films that have been overpraised because people feel they have to justify being there. They've been doing this for years. This is the pattern. You know, a film has gets a few things right, it tends to be very, very positively, even ecstatically received. But then, of course, it goes out into the world, the actual world, and, you know, it's a different story. But at least we seem to have four films. We have Zola, which, you know, is a love-hate, but some people love it. We got...
Which, by the way, before you continue what you're about to say, I spoke to the envoy from Cannes.
Yeah.
Here, and he told me that they might choose Zola as a midnight screening at Cannes.
Okay, that works. Yeah. Okay, right. So Zola, it's Palm Springs, it's Minari, probably, although you haven't seen it yet, and it's The Father, and we didn't mention the abortion movie. What was your take on that? The one?
Oh, and you know what, much like Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, it has a very difficult title to remember, but I believe it's called Never, Really, Sometimes, Always.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
It's by Eliza Hittman, and she's a real talent. She, mm-hmm. she directed this film called Beach Rats, which was at Sundance 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this is getting comparisons to... this is being compared as an American performance 30 weeks in 2 days.
That's high praise.
I know, but I wouldn't compare it to that because they are somewhat drastically different movies.
Okay.
But both are about abortions. If the Romanian movie was about a legal abortion, this one is actually about a legal abortion.
Okay.
The main character, she has to go
to New York, right?
New York.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, to get the abortion because in her Philadelphia small town, the counselors, the doctors are refusing to give it to her, and they even end up showing her an anti-abortion video to try to persuade her to keep the baby. So, anyways, she brings her cousin along to the ride to New York, and it's a very simple but sweet movie. But at the same time, there's a lot of uncomfortable passages to watch, much like in the Romanian movie.
Does the biological father figure into the film at all?
Not at all.
Okay.
The biological father is nowhere to be found.
Mm.
Splattered here and there within the narrative about possibly it being a rape, but we never really know for sure how she got pregnant.
Right.
But the title derives from the questionnaire that is asked to her when she makes it to the clinic.
Right.
And basically, they ask her questions, and they say that you can answer questions with four choices. Never. Never.
Never. Sometimes. Always. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. It's basically that complicated title, and that scene is one of the best actually, you forgot to mention another movie which I actually quite liked, but I don't know if it will find an audience, and it's Sean Durkin's new movie. He's actually coincidentally, ironically, the director of Martha Marcy May Marlene.
What's the title?
A movie called The Nest.
N-E-S-T?
Yeah. Excuse me?
Can you spell it? N-E-S-T?
Right, exactly. The Nest. N-E-S-T.
Right, okay.
Which stars Jude Law and Carrie Coon.
All right.
And it's a real slow burner. There was tepid applause at the end of the Echo screening, because this is totally not your Sundance movie. This is something that you would probably see at Cannes. It moves at a snail's pace, but the dread is just all over this movie. Much like it was on Marcy, there's a lot of medium and white shots.
Right.
There's barely any close-ups.
Mm.
Okay. And Carrie Coon is fantastic in this. She really is. Mm. And I mean, if there was justice, she'd potentially get an Oscar nomination for this at the end of the year. But I just can't see this movie connecting with a commercial or mainstream audience, because it's just running too slow.
Okay. Well, look, even if these films are none of them, I mean, as you said, the Adam Sandberg will undoubtedly be a commercial hit. But the others, even if they're not big hits, at least it makes it worthwhile to go there for, you know, as you say, five or six films that kind of turn your head and you feel good about. So, you know, it happens every year. There's always five or six. So I'm glad to hear that they've happened.
The Jamal Khashoggi documentary, which is most definitely going to be in the running for Best Documentary Feature at next year's Oscars.
Oh, great, okay.
It's directed by Brian Fogel, who gave us the excellent Icarus back
in 2017.
I believe. And it's about the slain Saudi journalist.
Right.
And I mean, this is just incredible investigative journalism on his part. He really, really just puts the whole story together, and you leave the theater infuriated by
the Saudi prince. Yeah.
Not just by the Saudi prince, who is most definitely the main villain in this movie, but by the political elites that basically turn their heads on.
Starting with the Trump administration. Yeah, right.
Right. Administration who don't come out of this movie looking very good. Mm-hmm. And Brian Fogel was there. It's 2 hours. It's a little over 2 hours, but it really flies by.
Right. Okay. That's good. That's very good to hear. Very good to hear. Are any of them? Is there any question about distribution on any of these, or they all arrive with distribution? What's the deal on?
I'm not sure why Amazon bought Apple's Uncle Frank for $12 million. I'm still flabbergasted by that, actually, because I mean, first of all, the reviews are middling. It's not a very good movie. If you thought Green Book was a typical '90s Oscar bait, then this is even worse. I mean, it looks like it belongs in the...
Well, let's be clear just for a second. It takes place in the 70s. It has to do with a middle-aged guy played by, now I've forgotten,
Paul Bettany.
And he's basically, it's a big deal, he wants to come out, but he can't, or he's having conflicts about it or something, right?
Well, because he comes from the South, and his niece really looks up to him.
Yeah.
And she ends up visiting him in New York, and it's in New York while she's studying, I believe at Columbia, that she finds out that he's gay.
Yeah.
And that he's been hiding it from
the family. Yeah.
The entire time. Mm-hmm. But she's fairly open-minded, and I mean, she doesn't really care that much. But then his father died, and they both have to go back to the South for the funeral, and he brings his partner with him, much to his you know, much to his disagreement. But the partner really insists, and the latter half of the movie turns into kind of a road trip movie. But I mean, I expected more from Alan Ball, who tends to really delve into the very dark and disturbing. I mean, American Beauty and 6 Feet Under.
Right.
But there's really nothing dark or disturbing about this movie. It's mostly middle of the road, and I'm not sure why Amazon bought it for $12 million. I really, really don't think it's gonna make even $12 million at the box office.
So what's the so I have the rundown of so far, and I don't mean to hurry, but it's getting late, what's happening tomorrow is Tuesday. Well, usually it's over by Wednesday, although, you know, I guess, you know, maybe once or twice I can remember something happening. Usually, but if it hasn't shown by Wednesday, forget it. So is there anything happening on Tuesday or Wednesday that looks promising?
And I actually thought about you saying that to me the last few years when you've been here. You really do believe that, and looking at the schedule, it doesn't even look like tomorrow's going to be that big of a day. Minari is going to screen at the Eccles, which is going to be its big, wide screening.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, we have the movie Lost Girls, which it doesn't sound so good on paper. It stars, what's her name? Lost Girls. I'm trying to see it here.
That's okay. You haven't seen Wendy, I take it, right? You haven't seen Wendy?
I have seen Wendy, actually. Wendy is a total disappointment.
Okay.
You know what? It's basically what we all thought it would be. It's Ben Zeidlin directing Peter Pan, and much like Peter Pan, Ben Zeidlin has clearly not grown up as a filmmaker. And you know what? I absolutely love Beasts of the South Wild, but I mean, he hasn't really matured as a filmmaker. It's the same stick.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if he would have chosen a better story, it would have worked. But I mean, making an art house Peter Pan it feels just so misguided and uninspired.
Well, as you know, and what everybody's saying, Ben's been working on this film since sometime in 15, I think it was. Certainly 16.
4 or 5 years.
And this is probably something that investors and friends, and they say, well, this is right up your alley, and you could enhance the the Peter Pan mythology and add your Beast of the Southern Wild, textural, swampy, organic feeling. So it probably, I can see why they thought, this is good. We can double down and do the same thing, but in a different context. But as you say, as is noted, 8 years is a long time, and you don't want to see the same thing after 8 years. You want to see something a little different, so, right?
Or at the very least, choose a good story to tell.
Yeah.
Because Peter Pan is not that interesting. As an animated movie, it's great, but I mean, even Spielberg failed with Peter Pan, The Hook. So,
but there is, I understand, Captain Hook, no? They do hold on to that character?
Yes, there's a Captain Hook revealed at the end.
Okay.
Maybe I shouldn't have said that. But there is absolutely no Tinkerbell, and which is fine, whatever. All right. But I feel bad saying these things about Wendy, because, I know Zeidlin has been working very hard on it in the editing.
Right.
Trying to find some some kind of coherence to his narrative, but I don't think he found it. I mean, the first half hour is enough, but then it just becomes the real slog.